Authoritarian leftists in Canada are not happy. Why? Because the CBC in Quebec dared to do something that CBC English would never do. They told the truth about rapid onset gender dysphoria and the terrible and crippling impact it has on girls and young women who are lured down that path. It's Fake News Friday. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is The Candace Malcolm Show. Hi, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning into the podcast today. Don't forget to like this video. If you're new around here, please consider subscribing to our True North channel. It really helps us out. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review if you're listening to this podcast and you enjoy the podcast. And finally, head on over to our website, tnc.news, so you can sign up for a newsletter and you will never miss an episode. Okay, so today I want to talk about some extraordinary journalism that was done by none other than the CBC. And I know Fake News Friday is usually the show, the time of the week where I pick the absolute worst stories, the worst examples of fake news and bias reporting and expose it. Today is going to be a little different. I'm going to talk about a piece of journalism that was tremendous, that really did something that so few in Canada these days are willing to do. And I'm going to focus on the reaction, because the reaction to this documentary is really telling, and the reaction that we see from the authoritarian left, the people who just want to shut down any debate, any conversation. They don't want to have these conversations, which is all the more reason why we should have these conversations. These conversations are so important. Okay, so last Friday, March 1st, the French version of CBC, which is called Radio Canada, Quebec CBC, they put out an original documentary, an hour-long documentary. It aired on Friday evening. It was called Trans Express. And really, I mean, it was essential. It's in French, and I'm going to do a future episode on it where I break down the entire content of the documentary, because it's so well done. And again, it's something that English CBC would just never do. And so I didn't want to try to squish that into this episode. I'm going to save that for a future episode where we're going to go through, and I translated it, and I'm going to explain exactly what they learn, what they tell, and what's happening in Quebec. But today I'm going to focus, like I said, on that reaction. So just in a nutshell, the documentary follows four young women, girls in Quebec, who are sort of lured down this path towards gender transitioning. It starts out with puberty blockers. Basically, all you need in Quebec is one letter of recommendation from a doctor, which we learn is incredibly easy to get in as little as, again, just one 20-minute consultation. Some doctors are willing to write this letter. From there, that allows you to go on puberty blockers, which girls start. In the documentary, we saw young girls doing it as young as 12, 13 years old. The next step in the so-called gender-affirming healthcare, which is really just sort of, again, promoting trans and sex change. Gender affirming is a euphemism. But again, pushing sex changes onto young girls. The next step is testosterone. So they start taking this really intense drug that just changes everything about their body and their mood and everything. I mean, pumping a child full of testosterone is really quite something. And then from there, they often want to move on to the surgical element, which is including a double mastectomy, basically having your breasts removed. And from the story, what we heard is basically that many girls that go through this process, once they grow up, once they get past puberty, past the awkward stages of being in those young, you know, 13, 14 years old, by the time they're 18, many of them do have regrets. Many of them start the process of detransitioning. And so, again, that's what we learned from this documentary. I really do encourage you to take a look, especially if you speak French, or if you want, you can watch it with the subtitles on. But again, really important work. And I think that this is the kind of thing, this is why we need journalism. This is why journalism is so important. You know, I spend a lot of time on this program criticizing journalists, talking about how biased they are and how bad they are at their jobs. But the reality is that the role of a journalist in a society, I believe, is very important. That your job is to tell stories, to talk about social trends, talk about social contagions, even if it's unpopular. Even if it's unpopular. And here is a case where it is uncomfortable and unpopular to talk about the stories, mostly because of the reaction that we see from the left. But you can still have a big impact. We saw this happen in London a few years ago. So a BBC journalist, now former BBC journalist, Hannah Barnes, wrote a book about what was going on at the Tavistock Clinic. The Tavistock Clinic was the main center where kids were getting transitioned, girls were getting transitioned in London. A woman wrote a huge expose. Hannah Barnes did a tremendous job, really just talking about how quickly this process was taking place, how many girls were just rushed through the process, and how many of them, again, ended up regretting it. The practices were so sloppy. And the result of Hannah Barnes' incredible journalism was that Tavistock Gender Identity Clinic closed. They closed because of the work of this one journalist. So these kind of reports have an impact. They can really change what's going on in society. And so again, just want to applaud Radio Canada, CBC French, for having the courage to put together this report. And like I said, I watched it. I watched in great detail. It's really, really well done and tremendous. And now, because it was so well done and it will have an impact in Quebec, it's already having an impact in Quebec, the usual voices, the trans activists, came out avidly opposed to it. They were mad. They were angry. They were swearing. They were not happy that someone would dare to do an expose on transing of young girls and young women. And they basically don't want you to know what's happening. That's the gist of it. They don't want you to know. So they have these really profound, angry reactions to try to chill speech and to try to make people feel scared to talk about these topics. So here are a couple of reactions. We had a lady called Michelle Blanc, who's a transgender woman, which means a biological man. She went on radio. He went on radio in Quebec and basically said that he was profoundly shocked by what he saw, and that what we've seen is that it went from being very hard to change genders to being very easy, and he's saying that's a good thing. But the whole point of the documentary is saying that's a bad thing. We should probably proceed with caution when it comes to sex change operations, especially for girls going through puberty. Okay, next we had a trans activist called Celeste Trianon, and she accused Radio Canada of performing junk science and claiming that this by further platforming anti-trans junk science, Radio Canada is granting a voice of authority to these bad faith actors who are attempting to erase us, dehumanize, and eliminate us from public life. Let me tell you, folks, I watched a documentary. That's not what it does. There's no bad faith actors here. There are concerned physicians. There are concerned parents. There are women who really live with the regret of their actions. It's not bad faith. Okay. These are people telling a story. No one's attempting to erase trans people or dehumanize them or eliminate them from public life. We're trying to understand this phenomenon and make sure that children are protected. That's not the same thing. And this is kind of what they do, right? They throw really bad accusations at people who want to talk about this issue. They make you feel like you shouldn't talk about it, or you will get accused of being a bad faith actor or being a bigot, being a homophobe or a transphobe, and trying to eliminate trans people from public life. Okay, next we have a University of Alberta law professor called Florence Ashley. She wrote on X that Radio Canada is jumping on the moral panic train by making a whole documentary platforming anti-trans views in the middle of an unprecedented rise in legal persecution towards trans people in Canada beyond disappointing. They should be ashamed. Interesting that she calls this a moral panic. Look, we've lived through a couple of moral panics in the last few years. I think COVID and the vaccines, that can easily be classified as a moral panic. I don't really see a moral panic when it comes to trans people. I think that really this trend kind of came up quickly. Not a lot of people were paying attention to it. The numbers have changed drastically in the last 10 years. A lot of people, again, are still asleep to it. And now we finally have voices and people coming forward saying that the strategies that we're taking and the way that the medical community, some of the medical community, are treating this issue isn't right, isn't good. That's not a moral panic. That's just being prudent and reacting to what's happening around us. She claims that there's an unprecedented rise in legal persecution towards trans people in Canada. I have to say, I have no idea what she's talking about. An unprecedented rise in legal persecution towards trans people in Canada. Does anybody know what she's talking about? A rise in legal persecution? Maybe I missed something. Maybe I missed a whole bunch of stories about trans people getting arrested and jailed. Anyone know what you're talking about? If you do, maybe you can write about it in the comment section, because I'm happy to look into that. But I am very unaware of any such thing that she's talking about. Okay, let's move on to Rachel Gilmore, who has become one of our favorite people to highlight. She's a former journalist with Global News, and now she seems to be doing investigative reporting with an advocacy organization called Check My Ad. She calls herself an award-winning journalist, and she's very active on Instagram and TikTok. So she had sort of the loudest reaction and the most in-depth. So we're going to play a couple of her videos here and react to them. So on March 1st, shortly after the documentary came out, Rachel Gilmore tweeted, "Radio Canada's so-called investigation into gender-affirming care is a case study in how not to do journalism." Okay, so this, like, what, 25-year-old is going to give us a case study in real journalism versus how not to do journalism. She says that it's embarrassing and harmful that has trans activists saying, "What the F, CBC?" She posted a little video of herself here. So we're going to play this video now, and I will try my best to react and sort of try to respond to some of the claims that she's making. Apologies in advance, because it's a little irritating to watch. But here we will watch this clip. Here is Rachel Gilmore.
Let's talk about an investigation that was published yesterday by Radio Canada, which has been slammed as beyond disappointing. Or as trans rights activist Faye Johnstone characterized it, "What the f-, CBC?" The investigation looked into gender-affirming care for trans youth, but they didn't speak to anyone with a positive experience with transition until 40 minutes into the hour-long investigation, which is grossly misrepresentative of gender-affirming care's real regret rate. The Associated Press looked at 27 studies on the matter and found that 99% of those who receive gender-affirming care do not have regrets. But Radio Canada speaks to five...
Okay, stop that right there. So first of all, Rachel says that they followed the experience of four girls who went through transitioning and only one was positive. I would sort of disagree with that, because again, in the documentary, they do present the stories of four girls who all had diagnosis of gender dysphoria and their various experiences. I would say that one of the girls that they speak to early on in the documentary was positive about it. She was very excited about it. She went through the gender hormone treatment, and it wasn't until later, when she got a bit older, that she had a negative experience and wanted to detransition. So that whole thing that we don't meet a positive story until 40 minutes in, it's just not how the documentary plays out. Second, she uses a stat, which we do hear a lot. A lot of people throw this statistic around. It's from the Associated Press. It says that 99% of patients do not have regrets. And so this basically looked at 27 studies of almost 8,000 teens and adults who had transgender surgery, mostly in Europe, the US and Canada, and only 1% expressed regret. So that is out there, but there are other studies that painted very different pictures. So there was an Oxford study that came out in October 2022, and they found that the rates were quite different, that the rates of detransitions were higher among trans men, transgender women, which are biological men, 11%, and transgender men, which are biological women, 4%. And we're also talking about people who go through the process of actually detransitioning. So if you're talking about 11 or 4% that actually go and get the reverse surgery done after the initial surgery, that's even a higher number than the people who might feel regret. We heard on the show a couple weeks ago about a doctor talking about how many of these surgeries get botched because they're so novel and they're so difficult. And so people end up having chronic pain or having a lot of discomfort, sexual discomfort, after these surgeries that might lead to regret, not necessarily detransitioning. Reuters did, also talked about this in December of 2022. And basically the idea is that in Europe, they follow the same course of action as we do in North America, but they go much slower. It's a much more methodical approach, which is very different. And what we learned in this documentary in Quebec is basically that the mindset of the doctors is that you have to act as fast as possible to get this done, because that will improve the mental health of the children. So they really rush you through from puberty blockers to hormones to surgery. It all happens sometimes in a matter of like a couple of like 18 months or 2 years. And in Europe, it doesn't happen that way. And so when you combine the studies from Europe and North America, you kind of water down the results, because Europe seems to be much more sort of thoughtful about this compared to North America, where the emphasis is like, let's just get this done as fast as possible, and let's not ask too many questions, and let's just like support and affirm the child in their gender dysphoria. Final point here about detransitioning not being very common or being less than 1%. If that were really the case, why is it that we see so many detransitioners in the public, on social media, on YouTube. It seems that we constantly hear the stories of these young girls who were rushed into this decision, who later regret it. Jordan Peterson did an excellent, excellent interview with a young lady named Chloe Cole, who is 18. Her story is basically that she started transitioning at age 12, and by 15, she had had the double mastectomy. So she started at 12. By 13, she was taking drugs. 15, she had the surgery. Now she's 18, and she is a strong advocate against this ideology. And she talks about the process of detransitioning. So let's play that clip.
My dad asked, like, about the regret rates, and they said, like, oh, I don't think they even used the word detransition. They said, like, oh, there's less than a 1% to 2% regret rate. And they also told my parents that if I wasn't allowed to go through with this, then I would be at risk of suicide.
So those are all the typical things that they tell parents, that if you don't allow your child to transition, that they might commit suicide, that detransition regret is very, very low, and don't worry about it at all. You know, in the documentary, the Quebec documentary, it was really interesting. They interviewed a young woman who ended up detransitioning, and she talked about how basically a week after she had her double mastectomy, she felt regret. As soon as she removed the stitches and saw her new body, she didn't like it. She still didn't feel good. And she knew that she wanted to get her breasts back, essentially. And so she called up her doctors, the same therapist that pushed her down this path towards transitioning. And it's so ironic. At that point, they basically said, well, you know, you're still in transition. You're still in trauma. Why don't you wait? We need to do a year of therapy. You need to wait at least 3 years before you can even talk about going down that path. And they really urged caution. And she also made the point that when she wanted to transition, she had the support of so many people. Everybody was sort of in her community, online. People were excited for her. Her doctors were really supportive of her transitioning. And then as soon as the coin flipped and she changed her mind, she felt completely alone, that no one was supporting her, that everyone told her that she had to wait, that people told her that, you know, she was being too rash or whatever. And it's just so ironic that they urge caution on that side, but not the initial life-changing, irreversible changes to her body. Okay, let's go back to Rachel Gilmore's video here.
Experts opposing gender-affirming care for you, 3 parents with negative experiences, 2 teens with negative experiences, just 1 supportive expert, and 1 happy trans teen. They also make a big show of attending.
That's not true at all. Again, I watched a documentary. The main voice that we hear throughout the documentary is a Quebec researcher who is in favor of trans-affirming care. So she's pro-trans. And we have her voice throughout the entire documentary explaining what the rationale is and why these things are happening, why it's happening so quickly. And so for Rachel to say that they only interviewed 1 positive trans person, I mean, it's very misleading. The documentary overall was very balanced. It actually did try to show both sides of the story, even though its focus was on girls who felt harmed and it didn't serve them well. But overall, you know, we heard from lots of different experts, lots of researchers, and this idea that it only featured 1 isn't true. It also featured many clips from another doctor in Quebec who's sort of seen as a rock star in this field, very pro-trans, and it featured her comments throughout. And then at one point, it mentioned that they invited her on the show, and she said no. She refused to go on the show. So again, Rachel's either didn't watch the documentary, or she's not being honest about what it did and what it says. Okay, let's keep playing this clip.
A conference in New York put on by this group, which is against gender-affirming care for youth. Of the 6 experts interviewed in the entire piece, 4 are from this. Here's what Celeste Trianon told me about this.
By further platforming anti-trans junk science, Real Canada is granting a voice of authority to these bad faith actors who are attempting to erase us, to dehumanize us, to eliminate us from public life.
Junk science is right. They repeatedly platform this Swedish anti-trans activist who says that there's no evidence that providing gender-affirming care is beneficial for mental health. It's literally okay. So easy.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let's just stop right there. Okay, so basically, again, she claims that there's this group that's overrepresented in the documentary. But then, like, there's nothing wrong with that group. That's just a group of experts in the field, and their positions have led them, their research has led them to the position that it's not a good idea to rush girls with gender dysphoria, rapid onset gender dysphoria, through a transition. And she says, just because they're part of this one group, we shouldn't listen to them, or that's wrong. And then she, again, plays that clip of this woman just randomly accusing them of junk science. And she takes aim at a Swedish doctor that was featured in the documentary called Dr. Mikael Landin. And so basically this doctor, who they call a quack scientist pushing junk science, in reality, this is the chief physician at the University of Gothenburg Hospital. He's a professor at that university in the Department of Psychiatry and Neurochemistry. So pretty credentialed, pretty successful, established doctor here, not just like some quack. Like this is a person who actually knows what he is talking about, unlike the two people that are featured in Rachel Gilmore's video. Okay, let's resume.
Easy to find a study proving him wrong. Thaddeo Canada also had an actress.
Okay, sorry, just one more point there, if we could pause that. So the point that she was making there was that Dr. Landin, this doctor from Sweden, says that there's no benefit to transing in terms of mental health. And so she just grabs this one study from the JAMA Network, basically affirming her point. But the reality is that you can find studies that will point to either direction. Like, the experts don't agree on this topic, which is why it's such an interesting topic. It's still new, it's still novel. There is basically a split among the people who look at it as to whether it's a good idea to rush kids through transition. The rationale behind rushing kids through transition is that many trans adults look back and say, you know, my teenagers were so difficult and it would have been so much better if I could have just been trans back then. And so the idea is, to help mental health, you just have to get these kids on the path, have them transition as soon as possible, and that will improve their mental health. The other side is saying, well, look, people who have severe mental health issues, transing doesn't help. Like, if you're depressed and you have anxiety and you have suicidal ideation before transing, and then you go through all this medical procedures, including sex change operations, essentially, at the end of the day, that might not solve the underlying problem. A lot of these kids still remain miserable after the transition, and that's certainly what the documentary aims to show. And of course, there's studies that promote this as well. So Stats for Gender, they looked at 129 female to male patients, and basically, because of complication rates, they found that mental health worsened the outcome, especially after those who had the surgeries. There's another study that says that there's little evidence to assert that puberty blockers are necessary to prevent suicide. And a prominent study that looked at medical transitions found that it did not alleviate suicidality, and that there's no advantage of surgeries. A long-term Swedish study found that post-operative transgender people actually have considerably higher risks for suicide. So it's not just like a slam dunk, look, I found this one study, therefore this doctor is completely not to be trusted. The reality is that these studies are complicated. And like, what we know is that if you're happy and you transition, you'll probably remain happy. If you have anxiety and depression and are suicidal, you're probably still going to have to deal with those underlying issues. Okay, let's go back to Rachel's clip.
14-year-old seeking gender-affirming care. They sent her to a private clinic where she secretly filmed her conversation with a doctor, and she shared an extensive made-up backstory and was ultimately prescribed testosterone. But this is not the average experience with seeking out gender-affirming care in Canada, as CBC's own reporting has found. But Radio Canada ignores this kind of thing and repeatedly reiterates the idea that things are moving too fast.
Okay, let's just stop it right there. So we covered this article that she's talking about, the CBC article about kids in Alberta. We covered it on Fake News Friday 2 weeks ago. It's not a slam dunk. It's not saying, like, this report right here totally refutes what the other one is saying. This was a story criticizing private care, criticizing the Canadian government for not providing more public care for trans kids. And they tried to tie it in with the Alberta ban. And so what we saw in that show, I recommend you go back and watch my episode on Fake News Friday, because the whole thing is really ridiculous and absurd. But the whole idea of lack of access in Alberta is based on this one girl who wants to transition, but basically the doctor that she goes to speak to isn't so sure that it's a good idea for her. And so we have this clip of this girl describing her experience and going and seeing a doctor. So let's play that clip.
It was like, asking me really weird questions, like, what if I wanted to get pregnant someday? What if I had a husband someday? I think he asked me, like, what if you want to keep your boobs? Like, it was so weird and invasive. We just wanted a referral to a gender clinic. Just a referral was all that we wanted, and then it would be out of his hands. He refused to do that for us.
So this is not talking about lack of access to gender-affirming care. This is talking about a sensible doctor who sees a child, a petulant child, basically just going into a doctor's office, demanding a letter, demanding drugs. Any doctor that's worth their weight would say no to a child like this. Like, a child can't just come into your office, demand something. I want drugs. Write me a letter. Just do it. Don't ask me any questions. Saying that it was like somehow like creepy and weird that a doctor would ask her about, you know, the future. Do you want kids? What if you have a husband? What, you know, you're going to lose your breast. You might not be able to breastfeed a child. You might not be able to have children. And the child was angry. The teenager was angry and upset and just saying like, shut up, doctor. Just give me the note. Give me the letter of recommendation. Let me do what I want to do. Again, that's not an example of lack of access to care. That's an example of a doctor doing really the job that doctors should be doing in our society. Okay, let's play the rest of this clip. I think it's almost done.
Caution. I mean, they literally call the segment Trans Express, which makes me wonder, what's the point of this? Because it really smacks of opportunistic moral panic at a time when the trans community really doesn't need that. Meanwhile, anti-trans organizations and people are thrilled about it. And the journalists responsible for the investigation are going on Quebec's biggest talk show on Sunday. So I guess all that's really left to say is, what the f- CBC? What do you think of all this?
Kind of amusing. She asks at the end, what do you think of all this? And then, you know, she posts a video on Twitter, and on Twitter, she doesn't allow anybody to reply because she actually doesn't care what you have to say. She doesn't want anyone commenting on her pristine works of journalism there. So yes, the documentary is called Trans Express because the whole idea is that the philosophy behind transing kids in Quebec is to do it as fast as possible, to get it done fast and quickly for the mental health reasons that she states. So calling the documentary Trans Express is true. It's not opportunistic to talk about this issue right now. It's relevant. It's culturally relevant because it's happening and so many parents don't know about it. And then she's angry that Jonathan Kay was tweeting about it and that somehow makes it bad, or that the journalists who created the documentary are now going on the number one talk show in Quebec to talk more about it. That's a win. That's a social win. That means that people are interested in this. They care about it. They're having these conversations that they might not have been having a year or two ago. And you can see that trans activists in the authoritarian left, like Rachel Gilmore, they're not happy about that. They just want to shut down the conversation. They only want to hear from the people who are sort of approved, that are saying the right messages, and anyone else, they work hard to try to discredit and silence them. Okay, so I think my producer is trying to torture us here because we have a second Rachel Gilmore clip here that we're going to play and respond to. So this is her reaction video. Again, she put out the first one the day the documentary came out on Friday, March 1st. This one came out a couple days later on Tuesday, March the 5th. So first she tweeted, some clinics in Quebec have stopped providing gender-affirming care to trans teens. It's a consequence of Radio Canada's sloppy reporting on the issue. One doctor said they didn't include one Quebec doctor that provides gender-affirming care in their investigation. So I did. Like I mentioned a few minutes ago, They tried. They talked about how they invited doctors to come on their program, and they said no. The doctors didn't want to go on the program. So Rachel pretending that she's some rock star journalist that's doing the job that an entire documentary team at the CBC failed to do is a bit rich, but what do you expect, really? Okay, let's play her second video that came out on Tuesday.
Some clinics in Quebec have stopped providing gender-affirming care to youth. And according to a doctor who still does provide this care in Quebec, that's a consequence of Radio-Canada's recent investigation, in which they found the time to interview four separate international opponents to gender-affirming care for youth, but not a single Quebec-based doctor who provides this care. So, Radio-Canada, I did it for you. This is Antoine Cloutier-Blais, a doctor in Montreal who actually works with trans patients. Here's what he had to say.
Radio-Canada's not going to take responsibility here for whatever consequences are going to come out of their documentary. But there are consequences as of now. Some clinics have decided to stop offering teenage care because it's getting too high of attention and they're afraid.
The report, he said,
okay,
does highlight.
Let's just stop right there. So we're supposed to believe a documentary was aired on Friday night. This interview and this video was released on Tuesday. So we're supposed to believe that on Monday, one business day, that gender clinics in Quebec have closed, you're going to have to provide some evidence of that, Rachel. If you're a journalist and you're making claims, you should probably provide the research and the evidence, like you claim, you know, that you're debunking these other doctors with research that you found online. How can you just claim that gender-providing clinics have closed? I haven't seen a single news story. I haven't seen a single tweet or anybody talking about a specific gender clinic that would have closed one day after creating releasing a documentary. The documentary was released. So if she's going to make this claim, I think she should probably provide some evidence. I find it very hard to believe that clinics stopped offering a service based on one documentary and that they were afraid of getting attention. And if that is true, well, I'll just say that is a win for the culture, because that's a fast reaction to a documentary. I do think this documentary will have wide-ranging effects and impacts. I think that it will wake up a lot of people in society to what is happening and to the dangers and the harms of the process that we provide to girls suffering from rapid onset gender dysphoria. But I don't think it's happening that fast. I don't think it's happening already. All right, let's resume this video.
Important concerns from parents, but it approaches them all wrong. The answer isn't, as the investigation posits, to make it less accessible. Instead, it shows that, frankly, like a lot of healthcare issues right now, gender-affirming care needs to be better resourced so it can provide the highest level of care to patients. He also fact-checked several claims made in the investigation, including the impression it leaves that puberty blockers might be unsafe.
Okay, wait. Let's just go back to that first claim that she says that the goal of the documentary was to reduce access. That's not the goal of the documentary at all. The goal of the documentary was to inform the public of what is happening and to urge caution, to say, hey, maybe we should take the approach that they take in Sweden and Finland, which is just to go slowly, to make sure that these girls are making the right decision, to make sure they understand the gravity of changing their sex, which will have an impact in their future. As a woman, you will never be able to, for instance, reproduce. Or if you are able, you won't be able to breastfeed your child. Like these are huge life-altering consequences. The documentary is just urging caution and to go slowly. They're not trying to urge that you shouldn't have access or that we should, you know, close clinics. That's not what they were arguing at all. They were just really pointing out the voices of doctors saying, this is going too fast. This is going too fast. And the idea that trans people in Canada don't have access, the opposite is true. We have seen that governments across Canada, across the country, at every level of government, politicians and governments have bought into the trans movement. We've seen story after story of new gender-affirming clinics, sex change clinics, opening up. The CBC reported just last month that a new surgery clinic was opening up in Ottawa, the first one in Ontario. Likewise, we learned that British Columbia was bringing in gender-affirming surgery for trans people, doing it closer to home. And of course, even in Alberta, even when Danielle Smith had the courage to come out and ban these procedures for minors, in that announcement, she also said that Alberta would be opening new clinics and places where people could go for trans surgeries, sex change surgeries. So even Alberta, in some way, is embracing this and providing more access. So the idea that this is an access issue, that's the opposite. That's literally the opposite of what is going on here. Okay, let's go back to that clip.
We do know blockers are safe and have reversible effects, and consequences of short-term use of blockers are negligible.
This care also requires regular check-ins.
No, we're going to stop that doctor right there. Saying that puberty blockers are safe and have reversible effects is just completely wrong. It's nonsense. Where have we heard that taking a drug, taking a medical intervention is safe and effective? Where have we heard that before? I feel like anytime you hear a doctor telling you that you can take a drug and it will have no effect on you, that they're safe and they'll have no side effects, totally reversible, you should be skeptical of that doctor. And in this case, we have reason to believe it. So National Post reported last year, so this is coming from the British National Health Services. Britain's National Health Service has long held that the effects are considered to be fully reversible, that is, of puberty blockers. But that position was updated in June 2020, and it now reads that little is known about the long-term effects of hormone on puberty blockers in children with gender dysphoria. While the physical effects may be reversible, it is not known what psychological effects may be. It's also not known whether hormone blockers affect the development of the teenage brain or children's bones. Side effects may also include hot flashes, fatigue, and mood alteration, the website now states. So again, just stating willy-nilly that these things are totally fine, totally reversible, don't even worry about it. Everyone should be very skeptical of that. Okay, let's go back to Rachel.
And hormone therapy is a process, and transitioning is a process, and self-knowledge is a process.
Patients usually start with puberty blockers, which buys them more time to make their decisions before moving on to something like hormone therapy, which can be more permanent, but patients are told that. Because in Quebec, once you turn 14, you can make decisions.
Just a second here. So she says that the whole point of the puberty blockers is it just buys time and it lets the child decide. Of course, this isn't true. Again, to the point that I've been making throughout this clip, is that they rush you. They rush you the next step. And usually the girls who are in the process, they just want to speed it up as well and go to the next step. And the statistics back this up. So of the young ladies, of the girls, and boys who get onto puberty blockers, according to National Post, there was a study that looked at 174 children, nearly two-thirds of them went on to hormones. The documentary Trans Express had an even more shocking statistic. They said that 9 out of 10 young ladies who go on puberty blockers eventually go on hormones. So the whole idea that they're just buying time and that not everybody takes the next step, that's not true. And again, it's all part of the process. It's all part of the story that people are rushed into these procedures. Okay, let's keep playing the clip.
Decisions on your own about almost all care deemed necessary for your health. But as Patio Canada painted a picture of things happening too young and too fast, they didn't really mention this broader context. Overall, Patio Canada has a lot it needs to explain about this so-called investigation. What do you think?
Again, what do you think? And then I'm going to turn off my comments because I don't want you to tell me what you think. It's funny that Rachel brought up the fact that the age of consent is in Quebec is only 14. Quebec is an outlier. Almost everywhere else in North America, the age of consent is 16. And I could imagine in a different context, Rachel would argue that it's wrong that a 14-year-old could consent to a sexual relationship or to marriage with an older man. I don't think that she really thought that through. I think she just used that statistic to try to own the CBC or own Radio Canada and prove that she's right. But again, not a very thoughtful person, so you can't expect her to put much thought into those videos that she's putting out. Okay, so let's take a step back here. Radio Canada produced an important piece of journalism, and in Quebec, it will be influential and it will have an impact. This is for two reasons. The first one is that the CBC is still relevant and is still important in Quebec. Unlike in the rest of Canada, where people hardly watch it and viewership is very down, very low, not a lot of people care what's happening at the CBC. In Quebec, it's different and it is still relevant. People talk about it, people listen, especially the fact that the hosts are now going, or the documentary filmmakers are now going on to Tout de Monde, which is a talk show that everybody watches in Quebec. It will have an impact. And the second reason it'll have an impact is because the content is so incredibly interesting and alarming. Most parents and most people don't really realize what is happening. They don't realize the extent to which it's happening and how much things have changed in the last 10 to 15 years. The more that people are aware of this issue, that girls are being pushed down this path, the more people will oppose it. And it is for this reason that the documentary will change hearts and minds. It will change public opinion in Quebec. And that is the reason why these radical trans activists are having the reaction that they're having. See, there's nothing wrong with the documentary. The documentary is excellent. The journalists involved were not motivated by bigotry or hatred. They were simply doing their job, of a journalist, which is exploring and exposing a harmful social trend. That is why the authoritarian left is responding the way they are. You can see in their tactics how they're authoritarian. They don't want to have a debate. They don't want to have a discussion. They're simply there to shut down debate by smearing opposition voices, saying they're untrustworthy, saying they're bigoted, insisting that their facts are wrong, insisting that the only experts that we should listen to are their experts. Well, that's not how civil discourse works. That's not how a free society functions. A free society should applaud real journalism. We should be happy and impressed by what we saw come out of Quebec. We should encourage more of that. The fact that CBC in English hasn't picked up the story at all, the story has actually barely made its way into English Canada, is actually quite telling about the difference between the two CBCs. And really, we should, as a society, we should reject hysterical voices and activists who are simply trying to shut down debate, trying to shut down conversations, and trying to ram through their own ideology. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's Fake News Friday. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is the Candace Malcolm Show.